This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I'm going to have fun today. I have two wonderful authors. At the bottom of the hour, I have our old friend Carol J. Perry. She's going to be here, and we're going to be talking about the release of her 10th book. That is so exciting because she was on here when I first started the program. She was my very first guest in the studio. And then she had book number one in her Witch City Mysteries. And now she's up to number 10. And just over 5 years, it is quite a wonderful, wonderful accomplishment. She's a Kensington author. She's featured on the end caps. She's just a wonderful person. And she's going to be with me at the bottom of the hour. So you have to listen to this. And we're going to be talking. I'm going to be talking to her. And we'll also be playing a very special book buzz for Carolyn Hart. Because Carolyn Hart is, somebody that both Carol Perry and I adore. So we're going to be playing that at the bottom of the hour. I'm just waiting now for Sandra Brown. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, you get to a point where you are so, so, so famous and you've written so, so many books. And Sandra Brown has certainly done that. She is quite an amazing author. And so it's really going to be exciting to talk to her. You know, she's got, what I think, 70 books now. I can't keep track of her. Boy, there Carol has 10. I think Sandra has 70. You still count after 50? My goodness. Anyway, it's going to be fun to talk to her about her new book. And I like it because it's set in Texas, where we used to live. So I actually know the area, which is funny. So it worked out perfectly. When I got the book, I said, oh, I know where that is. I know where that is. And so it was really nice when I got the book. And then, of course, well, Reedy Sand Brown is Reedy Sand Brown. You can't go wrong with that. And she is such a wonderful, wonderful author. I was just looking at all of the books she's written. My goodness, my goodness. She did some as some just pure romances, some excitement, some candlelight ecstasy. And I have Sandra Brown on the phone. Yes?
Yes, you do. Hi, Patsy.
Hi. And I saw your husband years ago.
Yeah, really?
We used to live in Texas, in Houston. And, of course, I went up to Dallas and Fort Worth area a lot for my son was involved in music. So we went to music programs up there. And your husband, of course, he's from that old school of anchors. They had to be hunks. They had to be hunks. You know, when they picked a news anchor, they had to be hunks. And your husband certainly qualifies. He is gorgeous.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. He's very sweet, too. This morning, I had already begun my radio tour, but he slipped in and brought me a yellow rose for good luck.
Anybody who was lucky enough to see him on the news, he was always so sweet. And, of course, as I said, handsome guy.
Thank you.
Now, I don't know. I think you were on the air, but I don't remember. Never noticed you.
I was.
You know,
for a while. Yeah.
I didn't notice you. I noticed handsome hunks. You know, what the heck? So, this is so exciting to talk to you. I haven't read all 70 books. Is it 70? I haven't.
I've written 80.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. But, I can't keep up with you.
Yeah, but 71 New York Times bestseller.
Oh, well. So. Okay. Well, I haven't even... I've read maybe around 50 of them, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there. But you are, of course, just a fantastic author, and it's a thrill. Actually, I was really happy when I got the book. The new book is called Thick as Thieves. And it's so funny. I know exactly where Caddo Lake is.
Yes.
Because we moved from England to Houston, and we used to go up to Dallas, and then we had a friend over what was that little town? The little town to the east, and so we went to Caddo Lake. And uh-huh. I tell you, that place, that was my first time I ever saw a swamp or, because I thought they were only in Louisiana. I had no idea that Texas, right. and it was creepy.
It's so much more. It looks like Louisiana, it's hardly anyone's general regard, you know, of Texas. It's not the first thing that you conjure up when you hear the word Texas. And so for that reason, I've always found it just a really fascinating place. And so when I was thinking of the plot of this story, I thought, I need something really atmospheric. And I thought, Caddo would be perfect for this. And so I tried to make the lake another character in the book. And it really is.
It
plays such a vital role in the plot.
You know, I actually hated the place because it has those tall cypress trees with those horrible roots that look like their arms coming out at you, black. I mean, it looks like they'll just grab, one of them's just gonna, it's like a horror movie. It was my first time in a swampy area, and everybody wanted me to go out in the canoe. I said, are you crazy? Are you nuts? And everybody else in the group went, and I stayed on shore. No way. It was creepy.
It has a real lore to it, that's for sure.
Well, it is definitely a character in the book, and exactly a perfect place for it, because, you know, you have a really, you have sort of an affinity to lawless lowlives.
It was because I had to grow up being the example to my four little sisters. I was the oldest of five girls, and I always had to be the good one, you know, to set an example. And so I think that the lowlife criminal is like my alter ego. It's like my chance to be to be naughty.
Well, you're good at it, because I remember in Mean Streak thinking, when you did your book Mean Streak, that those are really low life people. I thought to myself, how does she know these low life people so well? How can she make them so realistic? Because you're really good at it.
Well, thank you. I try to capture that essence, you know, kind of that essence, and because I think it, by contrast, it makes the hero and the heroine seem even more valorous, you know. So I use those characters as a tool to kind of contrast between the protagonist.
Well, it works. It works. Thank you. As I said, you can tell us about the prologue. You know, recently somebody said they went to like a writing seminar, and the person giving the lecture said, oh, prologues are passé. We don't need prologues anymore. Just go straight to the... And I thought, oh my goodness, some of my favorite parts of a book are the prologue.
Right. Well, I don't always use one, but this one...
Oh, this is good.
Thank you. I actually, this is where I started with this book, and I had no idea what was going to come after the 6-page prologue. I had no idea. But I was sitting in my office, and I heard a voice say, you know, talking about it is the surefire way to get caught. And I went, you know, who said that? I was kind of looking around. And then I saw those four burglars surrounding a bag of money that they had successfully stolen, and they're discussing their plan from there. And of course, by the end of the prologue, it says, you know, the plan had been shot to hell. One was in the hospital, one was in jail, one was in the morgue, and one got away with it. And so I started asking all these questions of myself. Who are these people? Where are they? Who'd they steal from? You know, how did the plan go so wrong so quickly? And I thought, if I'm asking myself those questions, then the reader will be wanting to know. The problem was having another 450 pages to fill. So, but that's where I started. And in this instance, certainly, I think the prologue worked because I had to tell two stories in one. I had to tell what happened over the course of that 12 hours the night of the burglary. And then I had to tell the consequences of that night, you know, 20 years later. So one, those tidbits that, you know, I recapture the crime and the criminals dovetailed into what was happening in the present day, because those who are still around, you know, their sins are finding them out. And so it was kind of fun. It was a challenge because it really was like writing two stories that needed to be equally vital and contain the same amount of tension, you know, and interest for the reader. So I kept the backstory segments very short and to the point, but I think it was like writing two in one. You know,
yeah, that's exactly, I think, how the reader will feel, like, oh, yippee. I have two Sandra Brown books here, and she just clicked them together and made it just perfect. And, you know, it really does flow so nicely. And I love the back and forth, because we are intrigued with that prologue.
Thank
I mean, we have to know, why did it go so wrong? Why? And of course, we know that there's one alive somewhere, and we know at least that, and so we're through the book, and it's really exciting. And of course, as always, you always have a romance in there somewhere, and
this one, you know, because the character of Ledge, who was kind of the hero, the anti-hero, he's so taciturn, and he is, you know, so contained. And, you know, I kept thinking, is the man ever going to say anything, you know, that I can write down? Because and then when he does say something, you know, it's all kind of obscure. He's not very straightforward. And, of course, in this story, he is the hero because he is trying to right a wrong. But he's also kind of the keeper of all the secrets. And so it was difficult for me to have his dialogue be truthful and not reveal anything. So that was another challenge that I faced in this book. But his romance, his immediate attraction to Arden, of course, it can't ever be easy. It's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be forbidden. And they certainly are, because they're on two sides of this issue. She knows he keeps lying to her. But yet the attraction is still there, and it's still irresistible.
Exactly.
Still a Sandra Brown romance.
That's it. Well, you always have that guy. Sometimes you even have him without a name. Now, in this case, we have Ledge. I think it was in Mean Street. We didn't even have the guy's name,
right,
until pages and pages. I don't know how many pages we had to go before what's his name already?
but that was
also really clever the way you wrote that one. So in this one, tell us a little bit about Arden Maxwell. She's an interesting character.
She is. She in fact, I think she and Ledge and even the villain, Rusty, they all were very complex. Rusty less so than the hero and the heroine, than Ledge and Arden, but Arden is a woman caught in a crossroads in her life, and the thing about it is that she's had this epiphany that she can never move forward with the rest of her life as long as she's shackled to this event that occurred when she was only 10 years old. But I say in the book that it remained the pivotal point around which her life still revolved. And so everything came back to that, you know, all of her failures in terms of career and everything. She just, she's stuck in neutral. She cannot move forward until she gets resolution on this. So that is her goal when the book opens, is that I've got to get to the truth of what went wrong that night, that what happened, why did my father abandon us? meaning her and her sister. And so she has a lot of baggage, I guess you'd call it, which I don't really like that word, but there's a lot of complexity to her. Likewise with Ledge, because, as I said, he's lying, he's self-protecting, but at the same time, he's noble enough to want to right a wrong, to finally, you know, get reconciliation on this. So they're motivated by the same goal, but the end result for each of them is quite different, and yet the same. Neither can go on with his life until, you know, they've confronted this issue.
Well, you take us through a wonderful story. And as always, there are twists and turns, and there's a surprise ending, because I think that's also one of the hallmarks of most of your books. There's always surprises near the end, and that's what makes it so exciting to read your books.
And, well, thank you very much.
You know, I want you to tell my listeners. I have so many listeners now. Of course, many of them are writers who. Some of them are just starting off. Would you tell them that they should really enjoy the process of editing? So many want to just finish the book and write it once and that's it, and not go back.
Oh gosh, no. I in fact, I don't even like for my editor to read my first draft. I write the first draft just trying to get the story out before. I'm always afraid it's going to leave me, you know, before I can get it on paper. And so, but it is, it's just, I'm concentrating on telling the story, getting all the plot points and building in the spikes and all of those things. But then I do another draft, which is really the crafting draft. That's the one where I take apart every scene and rewrite it until I just can't milk anymore out of it. And I kind of go through a little formula. Does it have enough of this? Does it have enough of that? How does it propel the story? If it doesn't propel the story, it's not a scene, so take it out. It's got to change the course of the story in some way, or some fact is learned, but it has to have a purpose. So I do all of that crafting, and that usually takes me as long, if not longer, than the first draft, just because I can work on the same scene for days. Until I feel like I've gotten all I can out of it. Then I do a third read-through, which is for pacing and to make certain that I've tied up all the loose ends, that there's not a hole in the plot, and then a polishing draft. So by the time I send it to my editor, it's undergone four drafts, but I may have rewritten the same paragraph 20 times.
So, yes. Well, good.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I wanted you to tell these people, because I tell them that and they say, oh, no, you know, somebody like Sandra Brown, she just writes it and it's just like perfect and
oh,
she doesn't have
gosh.
To. I said, No.
No. It's blood, sweat, and tears. And I agonize over every word. Is it the best word that I can use? And often, you know, my characters are the ones that are talking. And sometimes I'm like, are you sure you want to say that? You know, but I usually write down what they say, and I may have to go back and adjust and add and subtract and whatever. But I listen to the characters, and if it should, whatever they're saying should sound like the character, not like Sandra Brown. Beyond plotting, there's a lot to just crafting this story that will make your reader want to turn the pages.
Well, the readers, when they read your books, want to turn the pages. They look seamless. They look like you just sat down one afternoon and just whipped it out like this. But and that's why you're so talented, because you make it look easy.
No, not at all.
And it's really wonderful that you shared this with my listeners, so they don't feel quite so bad about having to redo things, because it happens to the best of
Well, somebody smarter than I, and I forget which writer it was, I want to say Sidney Sheldon or somebody like that, that I was reading when I was wanting to be a writer, you know, and some a bestseller that was, I think somebody like him, it said that good books aren't written, they're rewritten.
That's it.
And I, there's another quote from Hemingway that I love. In fact, I have a sweatshirt. On the front of it, it says, write drunk. And on the back of it, it says, edit sober.
That's a good
and
one.
And that's a quote from Hemingway. And so I think you kind of do. You write from your gut. You write from kind of a stream of consciousness. But then you want to go back and edit it as from a, you know, a standpoint as, does this make sense? Will this make sense to the reader? And so there's a lot of crafting involved.
Well, the new book, of course, is called Thick as Thieves, and I think that it is going to be a big hit because it really
you
really do, as I said, you make that Cadillac a character, a really creepy character, and it works very well. I have a feeling this one is also going to be picked up for some television program or streaming something or the other, because it would make a great one. And you've had how many now picked up for television?
Four
of them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I think, which one was it? White Hot was
uh-huh.
Hallmark. And you got a chance. Now my background is that I was writing scripts, and I did some work in Hollywood, and I was lots of long story, but I did take some books and you know, make screenplays.
Oh, really?
So, but yeah. I'll tell you, I always felt bad for the authors, because the authors would say, you know, when a book goes through Hollywood, you know, what comes out at the other end isn't always
right.
what they you're like. And I would always be the kind of, you know, person who would try to get into the heart and soul of the author and try to use at least a few of the words that they actually wrote.
Right.
Because
right.
it's heartbreaking when you've written a 350-page book and you get
they show
you the script and it's like 90 pages, maybe 120 pages if you're lucky. And you say, where are my words? Where's
right.
my dialogue? They
well,
change
I was
everything.
Fortunate enough on White Hot, you mentioned that. I was fortunate enough, and I'd worked with the same producer. That was our third movie together. And he came to me as a Sandra Brown fan and said, your books are just so visual, you know. But the on White Hot, he gave me executive producer credit, which only meant that I had a little bit of say.
Yeah,
and so they had written this scene that is such a dynamic scene in the book, and the script writer, to his credit, had done a good job in capturing the essence. But I said, you know, no offense, but I think my dialogue is better. Why don't we just use the dialogue from the book? And they all looked around the table and they were like, wow.
I've been to those meetings, and those are funny. They are funny. Oh, we say, the author wants us to use her words? Oh, my goodness, what's wrong with her? Well, I want to thank you so much, Sandra Brown, for being on today. And what is your webpage? What is it?
Sandra Brown.
My goodness.
Or .com. Yeah, it'll get you there.
Okay. So not difficult. And now, so many books. They definitely can find one, but they can start with this one. And just, you know, if we're in this pandemic for any longer, people can just start at the beginning. They should make a goal.
I highly endorse that plan.
And then if any of you do that, Sandra Brown will send you an autographed copy of one of them, right? If somebody reads all 91 of your books, right? All 81 of your books, will you definitely send them a...
I would do that.
Okay,
right.
Well, I'm up to about 50, so I'm going to start counting. I might be the winner. Okay, Sandra Brown, thank you so much
you,
for
Patsy.
Being on Joy on Paper today.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, isn't she wonderful? All right, we're going to play a book buzz, and then commercials, and then my very special guest.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery.
Ghost Ups Her Game, a Bailey Ruth Ghost novel, book 9 by Carolyn Hart. Here's the buzz. After a busy morning dispatching emissaries from Heaven's Department of Good Intentions to those in need, Bailey Ruth Rayburn is feeling flush with success. So when an urgent call for help comes through from her old hometown, she can't resist taking on the mission herself. After all, what could go wrong? With a shouted warning of her boss, Wiggins, irregular, problematic, ringing in her ears, she arrives to face a shocking scene. Professor Iris Gallagher leaning over the corpse of her colleague, Matt Lambert, the murdered weapon clutched in her hand. Bailey Ruth is only sent to help the innocent, but things are looking very black for Iris. With Wiggins breathing down her neck and her old friend Police Chief Sam Cobb casting doubt on her every theory, Bailey Ruth must uncover the truth, or this could be the last trip to Earth she's ever allowed to make. New York Times bestselling author Carolyn Hart's warm-hearted sleuth returns in the 9th Bailey Ruth ghost novel with a case that will test even her heavenly powers. Carolyn Hart is the author of 60 novels. Miss Hart was one of the 10 mystery authors featured at the National Book Festival on the Mall in Washington, D.C. She spoke at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. on mysteries in the American culture. She has received the Lifetime Achievement Award and the Amelia Award from Malice Domestic. In 2014, she was named a Grandmaster by the Mystery Writers of America. She is the winner of 3 Agatha Awards for Best Novel, 2 Anthonys, and 2 Maccabees. She is impressive.
For more of my suggestions on the books you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have my very, 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 very special guest. Oh, but she's not in the studio with me, which I am sorry to say. Oh, Carol J. Perry. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Patsy.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you, even though you're not here. Now, I will say this. Now, today, you're not in the studio, and it's sunshiny. Yesterday,
something to do with it.
Yesterday,
here too.
When I got your book, and yesterday was my day to sit and read it. Of course, then we have rain, and the skies are gray. It has something. You have Your books have something to do with the weather around here. You know, generally speaking, I mean, we've had times where we've had sunny days, perfect sunny days, and then you come to the studio and it rains like crazy.
I know. It's just a talent that I seem to have acquired over the years, some sort of witch magic, I think.
It is. It's a touch of that little magic that you have in your books. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I played just before you came on, before the commercial. And I want to remind people that the hurricane looks like it's going to hit Houston, you know, where we lived a long time. And it was so nice. Glenn Erickson always has this message to support the Red Cross, and people really start giving now because they're going to need a lot of help, I think. I played the Rita Moreau's Book Buzz for Carolyn Hart's new book.
I listened to Sandra. The whole program has been fascinating.
Oh, isn't?
And I love Bailey Ruth. I can hardly wait to read the new one of Carolyn Hart's Bailey Ruth wonderful story.
Well, Ghosts Up is wonderful, and as always.
Yep. And Sandra's, I loved hearing her talk about her editing process, because that's really where it's at. And I do too, like she does. I listen to my characters, because after a while, before I started to write fiction, I heard other writers say that their characters talk to them, and I thought, yeah, right.
Yeah.
But they do. And sometimes you have to cut them back a little because they get too talky, but it is a wonderful, editing is almost as much fun as creating the plot in the first place.
Well, I think so. I think that it gives you an opportunity to really, like, really admire your own mind, because you say, you read something that you wrote, you say, I wrote that? Oh, that's pretty good.
I know, yeah. Oh, I wish I had thought of that. Oh, I guess I did.
Yeah. Well, who did I have on last week? I used one of her lines, and she didn't know she had written it. Kelly Braffett, Owen King's wife, who is, of course, she's also Stephen King's daughter-in-law. And I read her a phrase that she wrote, and she said, oh, did I write that? Yes, you did.
Well, you know, some of us have kind of a dumpable mind, and this is kind of, we have done every book. I think we've done release day on every book.
I think so.
The first one together, or pretty close to it. And, of course, Murder Take Two is book 10 in the Witch City Mystery Series. And I've already finished 11, and I'm thinking of 12.
Oh, wow.
So I had to go back and look up a few things in Murder Take Two, because you mix them up in your mind after a while, using the same characters in the same city. But Murder Take Two, I'd like to use a bit of Salem history in quite a few of the books I've done, and this one particularly, with going back to a crime that happened in 1830 and tying it to one that's contemporary.
And and you do bring back a few characters too from your other books. So
every once in a while,
the Temple twins are back.
The Temple twins.
Yeah,
we're in one of Lee Barrett, my protagonist's class when she was teaching TV production 101, and they're twin retired Boston cops, and they appeared, I think, in Grave Errors. That was book 5, and they just kept talking to me and weren't in another book, so they're back in this one, and starring in this one, and it was fun to see them again.
It is, and well, that's the nice thing about having a series, that you have characters that can come in and out when you need them,
yep.
and when they feel like coming out too, that's it. Okay, that's enough. I've been hiding away here for long enough. Get me out. Tell us about this new story. You know, Lee Barrett has had so many jobs over the years now. Which makes it interesting, because she's always getting into something, and for some reason she's always finding a dead body.
Well, she doesn't always have find them.
Yeah, she doesn't find it, but they're there.
I didn't want her to, you know, just get too frightened by it all. But she has this other talent, this bit of psychic ability. She's a scryer, and she sees things in shiny surfaces, usually things that she really would rather not see. And but those usually have to do with a murder, whether one she's discovered or one she's learning about. And, of course, in her line of work, she's been in television one way or another through most of the series. And during the time that she was a reporter, she is right in the front lines of things happening in Salem. And this one was a particularly kind of gruesome murder for a cozy, but you had to have some blood in this one. And the coincidental part of it was that it almost exactly duplicated an 1830 murder that truly did happen in Salem, and was for a long time people didn't much talk about it, when the son of a very, very famous and wealthy and distinctive family in Salem turned out to be a hired killer. I first read about Dick Crown and Shield many, many years ago. I was looking up something else at the wonderful Essex Institute in Salem, and I came across just a line about it, which said just about what I just told you, that this son of a very famous, distinguished family had become a hired killer. And I always wondered about Dick Crown and Shield, so over the years, every once in a while, I'd read something about him, and I got the chance to tell his story in Murder Take Two, when a young college professor is accused of a murder that is almost exactly like that murder that happened in 1830. And the young professor had differences with a famous local professor, Samuel Bond, and had reason, really, to dislike him a great deal. So when they find the body of Samuel Bond in his bed, bludgeoned to death, almost in the same position as Captain Joseph White was killed all those many years ago, and there's a ladder to the window of his bedroom on the first floor, and it's just as there was all those years ago. And Cody, the young professor, has been teaching a course at Essex College, Essex University, on that murder. So he is definitely a suspect. And his uncles, the twins from Book 5, come to the rescue and ask police assistance, along with Aunt Ibby.
Oh, we need Aunt Ibby.
Aunt Ibby, her research librarian aunt, and she has a wonderful cat named Orion, who seems to have some magic powers of his own. And along with her handsome detective beau, Pete Mondello, Lee and Aunt Ibby and the cat and a couple of Aunt Ibby's girlfriends, and the twin cops from Boston, managed to have a happy ending to this strange.
Well, it better be a happy ending, because you are writing cozy mysteries. Although,
that's right.
You know,
we always have to solve.
Carolyn Hart doesn't like that term, because she always just feels that they are, you know, like the I think she'd like to say the perfect mysteries, like Agatha Christie mysteries. You're, you know, mysteries that really are mysteries that you sit down and you want to know what's happening, and but you're given all these wonderful characters that become, as you know now, you have so many fans who, they know these characters so well. As I mean, it's funny, you know, when you, like, when I got the book right away, I said, oh, the Temple Twins are back. You know, I was so happy. Like, yeah, where have they been? You know, so isn't it wonderful that you've been able to create this world for them?
It is. It's such an interesting process. The writer's mind is a strange thing. Now, for instance, in Murder Take Two, there's or was it the one before? Anyway, there's a mention of a person who owns a toy store. Yes, it's in Murder Take Two, because I needed her to go shopping for a game of Clue, the Parker Brothers game of Clue, which is important to this plot. And so I needed a toy store. So I invented a place called the Toy Trawler, and I made the owner of the toy store, Captain Billy Barker, who was a retired Gloucester fisherman, and I was thinking of an old restaurant that used to be on Route 1 up in Saugus, Massachusetts, that was shaped like a ship. So I gave him that for his toy store. Well, I liked him so well in Murder Take 2 that he's going to show up in Book 11, too.
See? It is really a joy to have this ability to write, this love for writing, because you create these worlds in your head, these characters that come alive, and it's wonderful for the author, and it's wonderful for the fans.
It is fun to have a series, and fans will write and say, well, there wasn't enough of River North in this book, or when does Anya get a book of her own, and they remembered the characters from before, and it's just gratifying, and I love hearing from the readers.
And of course, you are a Kensington author, and it's funny. I walked in this morning, and there's a package waiting for me. There's always a book waiting for me, and I have a new one. It's called Murder at King's Cote, and it's by Alyssa Maxwell. And
I love her. I love her, the mansions that she uses.
Yeah.
So descriptive.
And as always, and with her, her cover is beautiful. Your covers are, I think they have to be really Kensington's best. And I know that they so often show up on the end cap at Barnes & Noble.
They do.
Because you know, they're just so beautiful to look at.
I think so, too. And because Orion the Cat gets bigger and bigger because he has informed the editorial board there that the bigger the cat on the cover, the better the book. So you notice he's good size on Murder Take Two.
Yes, he is. I noticed that. He's never going to be a little thing in the background.
No, not at all.
He's right there up front. And Kensington, of course, is so wonderful. And I don't know what's happening now for you because, I know this is sometimes, you know, you have book signings and something. Unfortunately, I don't even know if Barnes & Nobles are open. I hope
some
that
of them are,
some
and,
of are.
And, but not all of them. And, of course, the sales will be down because there's so many bookstores being closed during this strange time. But the audiobooks picked up. And also the e-books. So, it's all good. It'll work. But I do miss, you know, usually when there's a book release, I have a book signing at the Gulf Beaches Library with a beautiful cake and many friends and readers, and I do miss doing that.
And then you do events like Sleuth Fest and some other things. Nothing. No Sleuth Fest.
We're zooming everywhere, but yeah, not
that's
the
not the same. And no BoucherCon, and I was looking forward to BoucherCon.
No.
I've become a big fan of BoucherCon ever since we had it here at the Vinoy. And I did discover it is true that you make the best connections at the bar.
I did, the
bar at the Vinoy Hotel is really nice. It's out there on the patio. And they have all those rocking chairs. So if you're sitting at the bar on the high stool, and if after a while you're saying, okay, maybe it's time for me to head for that rocking chair, yeah, it's really close. But it's really fun. BoucherCons are really fun, and it's a shame that we don't have one this year.
I know. And Sleuth Fest always had a nice bar evening with trivia questions and that sort of stuff, and that was fun. And I guess NINC, Novelist Incorporated, is still scheduled for the Tradewinds.
Ah, okay.
So I don't know whether it's really going to happen. And Tara, which is now Florida West Coast Writers and is no longer associated with Romance Writers of America and is including writers who are not, it's not exclusively romance writers anymore, but they are scheduling a conference next June that's going to be at the Airport Hilton. So the conferences are beginning to at least make plans.
Well, the one that the Tradewinds might be okay because they can meet outside.
Exactly.
It is a nice place. You can actually sit.
Yep.
It's got a perfect, lovely, large area for sitting outside. So that one might work out. Of course, everybody's sitting there in the heat with their masks on. It's crazy.
I know. I think I'll go to that one.
I think I'll go to that one too.
Yeah. And we don't have to stay at the hotel because we can commute to it.
Exactly, exactly.
Yep. Oh. So it's all good. And this morning, listening to Sandra, we were talking about editing. I'm working on book one for the new series. The new series.
Which is called?
The series is called Haunted Haven Mysteries, and the name of the first book in it is Be My Ghost. And so this morning, I've been doing some editing for the past few days. And, you know, I don't trust these machines, so I print everything out.
Good.
I don't trust the cloud. I don't, you know, so I print everything out. And I reprinted the whole, I'm up to chapter 10. And I have made so many edits because I find that I have planted clues that I didn't realize were clues. And then I have to go back and expand on them. So I that's been kind of fun. So the word count isn't huge this week, but the editing credits are just fine.
Well, I do get these, you know, comments that, you know, the editing is difficult. But the editing, as long as you use it as a game, I think it's fun.
I do. I like it. And I like taking out extraneous stuff and also finding clues that I didn't realize were there. That is so much fun. And then you go back and expand on what page that happened on. Like, I had written in a couple seated in the lobby of the hotel, and they were just there. And then I decided, oh, I can use them. So I went back and dressed them and gave them a few lines, and they are important now. But I didn't know what they were there for. So it is fun.
Yeah,
the whole process is fun. And when I think of the numbers, though, I mean, Sandra has, what, 80-something?
81. 81. Only 71 were New York Times bestsellers.
Well, I have, if you count the middle grade books and the biographies and the travel books, I am up to 22 books.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. That's a good start.
It is a good start. It is a good start. And you got a long way to go.
Until 5 years ago.
You know, exactly. And, you know, Mary Higgins Clark went all the way to 90. And
I saw my doctor for a 6-month checkup, and I said, I can't die. I have contractual obligations.
That's it.
You put that on me? And I said, oh, yes.
Oh, that's
You're
it.
Responsible.
You're responsible. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You know, it's always wonderful to talk to you. I want you to mention your website because you have a very unique website in that you have a lot of little videos. And explain your website to us.
Well, actually, my webmaster, James Austin, and I are just about to revamp it because some of the stuff is old and I have new pictures and all. But there are a number of my book trailers on there. My book trailers are done by Vaughn Henry Media, a local company that has done trailers for all of my books. So there are 10 now. The 10th one's just going up today, I think. And they have done all of those. And I have pictures of... with my Barnes & Noble end caps and that sort of thing. And we're about to redo it with more cat pictures and grandchildren and that sort of thing that some of the other writers use. So, but it's been effective, and people go to it and they write to me. And you just have to go to www.caroljperry.com.
Okay, absolutely. Carol J. Perry, remember the J, because there is another
yes.
Carol Perry
There's
who is a writer.
Carol Perry who writes. She writes history.
Yeah, she does.
And she also makes political comments, and I don't.
Yeah.
So if you see anything political, one way or the other, I don't care. But
yeah.
It wasn't me.
And it's a good idea. Oh, I'm going to have Bill Larson of Larson & Larson on. We're going to talk again about people who lose control, and especially in this time when people are at home too much, putting stuff on the internet that they will regret at some point. So it's best just...
I don't. I keep it to pictures of cats and grandchildren.
That's right. And talk about your wonderful books.
And talk about the book.
Exactly. Well, Carol J. Perry, well, I can't believe it. Number 10. And when can I expect Haunted Haven series debut?
It'll be in 2021 sometime because book 11 will come out next in the Witch City Mystery series, followed by Be My Ghost in the Paranormal series, followed by book 12 in the Witch City series, followed by book 2 in the Haunted Haven series.
This is exciting. It's exciting. You're going to catch up with Sandra Brown.
I'm going to try.
Okay. Well, again, thank you. Thank you so much for being a joy here on Joy on Paper today.
It's a joy to talk with you always, Patsy, and hope next time it'll be in person.
Okay. Oh, it has to be. I can't go on like this. I'm getting so tired of this. I'm wearing now Clorox number 5 all the time. Every time I come to the studio.
Yeah. I love it. Okay, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you again. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, she's wonderful. She is wonderful. And her book is so good. I love all her books, but I think this one, I don't know why I get such a kick out of these Temple twins. And so it, definitely you have to get this book. It's a fun book, as always, and beautifully written. She's an excellent writer and just a fun person. And I particularly like Orion the cat, always... has a, you know, Dr. Gary Weitzman was on last week, and he's trying to get me to get a cat. sent me an email saying, why don't you get a cat? Do you want a cat? But when you have so many books in the house, I'm terrified. And unfortunately, I have books everywhere. If my books were just on the shelves, that would be one thing. But my books are on the tables. My books are on the counters. My books are on the floor. And which, you know, I always have something underneath them, like something to get them off the carpet, but they are on the, there are piles on the floor. So that's a little difficult. But I do enjoy reading about Orion the Cat in Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries, and I'm sure you will too. So another day. We got through this, and I'm my throat is not, you know, I must be getting used to this Clorox number 5. My throat's not quite as you know, I was almost choking last time, but this is good. So we get used to these things in life. And you do wear your mask, you know, we don't want anybody getting in trouble here. As I said, I saw somebody in Publix get all bent out of shape about it. So just be kind to somebody. Okay, remember what I always say. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, or even just a one-off on the Hallmark Channel like Sandra Brown got. And you never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So start writing today. You can do it. In a year, you'll have a book. And in 2 years, you'll be here on Joy on Paper as my guest in the studio, because by then, we'll be over this. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him, because I really, really, really wish I had been a general. I'd be a good general. Okay, bye-bye. Say something nice. Be a change maker. Be good. Bye-bye.